Oh, no, we're going to do a recording now.
No, you got to listen. Or talk. No.
Yeah.
Of course, Laurel Tyrell, and today is the 1st of June, and I'm here with Lori and Jim Wilde.
Oh, Lori.
Yep. I'm at the Wilde home. How's that? And I've been specifically interested in some cultural information on Central, some historical information on Central. So, but before we begin recording this, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about your personal background, your education, your interests, and how you got to Central. Where were you born?
In Germany. Came to the United States in 1961. To be exactly on March 22nd, 1961, I landed in New York. Lived in Illinois for 1 month, or a little over a month. Into Alaska on the 29th of May, 1961. And been in Alaska ever since.
And how did you end up in Central?
We had friends living up here, and we liked the area for a recreational area, and in 1968 we purchased a gold mine for recreational purposes, and it had a cabin on it so we could stay like a long weekend, and that's how we ended up in Central.
Okay, and then we did find that you bought the property that we're sitting on today in 1977, and then you built a
cabin
here, mm-hmm. And you bought the property from Vi and Frank Pierce,
yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Who ran the store next door to you.
Next door.
What kinds of activities do you take part in while you're here in Central?
Well, I don't know about activities. I'm involved with the museum mostly, and then for any parties going on, I try to help out. Try to help out at school if we have a school and school is in session with crafts, teaching the kids crafts for their bazaars. And things like that.
You're also a sewer, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a quilter. Sewing actually was my original profession. Way back when.
You were trained as a dressmaker?
Yes.
In Germany?
Yes.
Do you still make clothing?
Once in a while, I make things for myself, yes.
But over the years, you've been fairly famous for creating outdoor...
Oh, yeah, outdoor fabrics, outdoor wear. I gave classes for making outerwear jackets. I gave classes for quilting. And what else we had classes for?
This was
Mark Locks.
Mm-hmm. This was through adult ed?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different than the crafts you taught the children. What kind of crafts did you teach the children?
Depending on their levels, we started making bead things, embroidery things, and crafts that were actually made from scratch. Like for decorations and or ornaments to hang on the Christmas tree. And usually I try to make it down there before Mother's Day to make something for Mom for Mother's Day. And we made something like appropriate, like a heart that we stuffed out or whatever, things like that.
And how about the museum? You mentioned that you... worked at the museum. For a long time you were on the board?
1988, I was voted in onto the board as secretary treasurer. And I was there as secretary treasurer, financial, whatever you call it, until '07.
So that's approximately 20 years.
Yeah, 21 years actually.
And during that time, you helped get grants?
Grants for the museum for extending services, extending display area. Donated books that we had received from an estate. I built a library. I didn't build a library, but I got the money to get a library built and enlarge the archives.
Who was on the board, if you can remember, in 1988?
Frank Warren, Ed Galvin. Jane Williams, I believe.
Was that one of the first years?
No. The board was established in the 80s, early 80s, before there was even a museum.
But Frank Warren and Ed Galvin had a great deal to do with
building the museum, yeah.
Museum.
Pat Oakes was out already. Gosh, I don't recall who the other members were. Lavelle Montgomery had resigned, that's why I had to be voted in. I don't think I was a board member. Al Cook was there. Al Cook was a member. Was a board member. Don't know.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about what kind of work you've done in the past while you've been living in Central.
Hello. No, it's not.
Okay, we're back with Lori Wild on the
1st of June at her home, continuing. She was going to talk a little bit about what kind of work she's done in the past.
You mean work as
Oh, maybe your family. What has your family done to be able to
sustain ourselves?
Sustain yourselves here.
Well, we started after we moved out here in 1985 permanently. We were gold miners, mm-hmm. And we made enough to sustain ourselves, the living comfort, being able to buy a new car when necessary and/or equipment. Until 5 years ago.
When you sold mine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you participate in any subsistence activities?
Yes, I do. We go hunting and fishing, and we do salmon fishing with a set net. And I get anywhere from 24 to 36 fish a year that I preserve with smoking and or canning and freezing.
And where's your fishnet site?
The fishnet site is at 40 mile on the Yukon River.
Uh,
when do you usually do your fishing?
Anytime after the 4th of July.
And that's because that's when the fish are running?
When the fish are running, yeah.
So you wait till the fish are running and then put your net in. And how do you find out the fish are running?
Usually somebody, we listen to the radio and we hear when the fish are in Port Yukon, and it's usually like about, I don't know, 4 or 5 days later when the fish start coming up here.
And then when do you do your hunting?
The hunting we do starting in August. We like to go caribou hunting up on the Charlotte River if the water's high enough. And then we go again in September, and we usually go up the river for 2 weeks. And we stay sometimes at the Candic, sometimes we stay at the Charlotte River, and sometimes we stay at Slavin's on the Yukon.
And that's because it's during the moose season?
Moose season, yeah.
I know you also collect plants. Do you still collect plants?
No, not so much. I sort of got out of that.
Lori, you used to collect lots of mushrooms.
I still go out for mushrooms. Yeah.
And where do you do that?
I do the mushroom in the central area anywhere between here and 8 miles, I guess. Sometimes I go 8, 9, 10 miles mm-hmm. to find them.
When do you do that?
That usually starts the end of July and first part of August, but the conditions have to be right. Hello?
Okay, we're going to try again with Lori Wild. We're still working on chatting about
mushrooms. Okay. I like to get enough that I can, and usually the ones that I can is the Boletus species, and the others I usually pick enough just for dinner, because mushrooms you should eat as fresh as possible.
And years ago, Lori and I were learning some new mushrooms together,
mm-hmm.
and we would make spore prints at night,
yes.
and then collect them the next day.
If we knew they were good, yeah.
How many years ago was that?
10, 15.
Maybe more. Yes. Do you think state and federal regulation has affected your subsistence activities over the years? Has it made them change at all?
No, I don't think so. No, not who I personally concerned, no.
I was thinking about the fishing.
The fishing, you know, now they say we can't only fish so many days a week. That's a little, you know, when you only need 36 fish. You know, so I have 10 fish today, and then they shut me off for 3 days, you know, before I can catch the rest of it. That's stupid, you know, and most people on the river right now, they're all subsistence. And it's not that they've taken a ton of fish out of there, turn around and sell them to somebody, you know. Like, each family usually just takes enough what they can handle. And I think that stinks. That totally stinks.
Because then you have to break camp, come home.
Yeah, break camp, come home, yeah. You can't keep the fish out there that long, you know, that you already got.
Mm-hmm. Go back again.
Go back again, yeah. It's just costly, plus with the gas.
Because you have to drive all the way to the Yukon, put in at the Yukon.
Yeah. And then go 40 miles off the river with the boat, you know.
Some of the things I wanted to ask you about Central's historical past was dealing with the store, etc., which you live next door to. And we've pretty much sorted through the fact that by Frank, bought from
Red Williams.
Red and Jane Williams.
The property.
The property. And it had been closed for a number of years.
Well, Red Williams once upon had a store there, but that was like long, 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 long time ago. Mm-hmm. And there was never no more sign up or anything else. And when Frank and Mike bought it in 63, they came out here and spent the summer and then came back to Fairbanks that winter. And then the following spring in 64, they came out and opened it up, and it was a permanent thing for them. And we have been coming out here since we were friends, since 1961, pretty much on any occasion that we were able to get away from Fairbanks, just for recreational, mm-hmm. you know, visiting and whatever, the area. And when I first started coming out, there was 29 people living in this town.
In the 60s?
In the 60s, yeah. Year round.
So how did Frank and Vi run it in the winter?
They ran it by themselves for quite a few years, except for the late 70s, I would say, starting probably 78, when they started going outside to the lower 48 for like 2 or 3 months. When they had somebody run the store while they were gone. And it was usually a local person. Mm-hmm. And then in 1982, Wyatt came to me and told me, she said, can you help me sell the store? So I helped her sell the store.
And you found Jim and
Well, I
Sandy.
Had it listed in the paper. Mm-hmm. I put an ad in the paper, and Jim said, I didn't know Jim Crabb at that time. He said he had been out here and off and on and whatever. Anyway, he wanted to buy it. And so they did, and within 6 months, the deal was done. It came like in the fall, and he wanted me to take it out of the paper right away, gave a down payment to Frank and Vi, and then he paid the rest of the down payment when we did the paperwork in the following spring, and he took over in the spring of 1982. And he had it ever since. And then the rest of it was financed.
What kind of activities took place there at Crabb's Corner?
Oh, there was always something going on. The DOT people in the summertime always came like Saturday nights for their beer and whatever, and sometimes why fix a snack for everybody depending on how much beer they had and things like that. It's just like, you know, just like get-togethers, like they call it tea in Boston maybe. But here we drink beer.
Did Vi and Frank have a liquor license?
They had a beer and wine license.
Okay.
And at that time that was called a roadhouse license. And, or it was Crabb's Corner in 1980. I was already living out here. Must have been 2 years after I would say 86, 87 before when Crabb got their liquor license. He had the roadhouse license. He got away with it for a while because it took a while for the state of Alaska to realize that the place was sold. Mm-hmm. And Frank had grandfather rights because of that beer and wine thing. And then the Crabb had to put in the motel and stuff like that. He was closed down for like 2 weeks where he couldn't sell anything until he got those agro units going and the motel units going, and then he got his license.
As a roadhouse?
As a roadhouse, yeah. Hmm.
How do you think mining activities have affected life in Central?
Well, Central was a boom town in the 70s when gold went haywire. It was close to 2,000 to 2,500 people living in this area. Including 101 Mile.
Right, I think we've pretty well established that when we talk about the Central area, most current residents include the Hot Springs and sort of out to Harrison Creek and around, you know, to Bottom Dollar, etc. Which are active mining areas. So you would say the 2,000 to 2,500 people were summer only? Or did they winter?
No, those were additional. Those were additional people that came just strictly from, let's say, from the 1st of May until the snow started flying. Because there were some big miners out here, and they had anywhere from 10 to 12 people working for them. Mm-hmm. Not that there was a lot of individual mines, there was, but some of those people were, they were in big time. Like Johnson's that used to mine up on Ketchum, they had about 10, 12 people. And there was another one down on Lower Deckwood, that area that we call the desert. I know they had a dozen people because Pete Hardenbrook worked for them. There was a whole bunch of, I mean, there was a lot of people out here.
And was that at the same time that LaRue was managing the Hot Springs? And there
yeah, that was about the same time.
So the miners' picnic was quite a...
Yeah.
Quite an event.
Yeah.
And there would be,
Well, the first time I went to a miners picnic was the year that we were, we lived out here. The first year we lived out here would be, I would say, I would call it 85, August 85, because before we always took off in a boat. Mm-hmm. We were never here for a miners picnic. We were always gone. And they used to have, well, that was when the federal government was trying to screw all the miners, you know, in regards to regulations
mm-hmm.
and all of that. And we had to fight the EPA and stuff, you know, when the EPA really came down on the miners. And there was big auctions and stuff, fundraisers going on. So the Alaska Miners Association, who are entity in regards to fighting the EPA at that time, you know, needed the money for the attorneys and stuff like that to help the miners out.
What was the end result of that?
Well, some of it didn't get passed. Some of them was, they said, hey, hold it a minute. You know, some of those restrictions, I mean, they're wanted water, clean it and what came out of your faucet at home in the city. You know, that just could not be accomplished. I mean, the water wasn't as clean to begin with. Before anybody started mining, because, you know, some of those streams, you know, they always had arsenic in it.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, by pulling the water and putting it in puddles and reusing and reusing and reusing that water, he said, yeah, the arsenic comes a little bit more concentrated. You know, in regards to, they started turbidity. Turbidity is a natural thing. When it really pours for 2 or 3 days, all the mud comes down the hill and runs into the creeks, just as if you were mining. You know, and this is something that the EPA people in Washington, D.C. did not see. Until all that got clarified and stuff like that, it was a little leeway. But even to this day, you cannot mine, get water out of the creek and dump the dirty water into the creek. You have to have settling ponds. That is still in effect.
So the these kinds of, this was during the 70s or mm-hmm. the 80s that this was all?
70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm. That this was all coming
yeah,
about?
Yeah, it was all coming about.
And so the change in mining came about then, because before that, there weren't as many settling ponds.
Many settling ponds. The only time that miners made settling ponds in those days was because when we had a dry a very dry summer, and there wasn't enough water in the creek.
Mm-hmm.
They had to pull the water. Or they were only sluicing maybe 2 or 3 hours a day. You know, some miners just, there wasn't, I seen Switch Creek up there totally dry. You know, you had to go down there with a coffee cup and find a little potty to get water out of it for making coffee. Deadwood is a little better, but there's a lot of places on Deadwood where Deadwood totally runs underground. You know, you don't see nothing on top. There's nothing there. That's why most of the miners ended up staying, stripping in the fall, getting everything stockpiled, so it had come early in the spring during runoff, so they had enough water to go mining, in case there's a dry year.
Mm-hmm. Be prepared.
Yeah. We weren't that involved with mining. We were small time, you know, operators. We never hired anybody to help us. It was sometimes a friend came out on a weekend just to piddle around with us. It was just strictly Jim and me operation.
Speaking of dry years, are there any stories about floods?
Oh yeah, there's a story about floods. In 89, Crooked Creek, we had 3 days worth of rain, and I mean 3 days solid, pouring rain on this side of Eagle Summit. And Crooked Creek flooded, and we had not moved into the house yet. But the basement was done, and the house was up. It was partially enclosed. We had just put the windows in that February. I forgot what month it was when the flood was. Well, it was summertime, I know it, because I ended up hooking the hose up to the well we had and hosing out my brand new washer and dryer that got flooded in the basement. We had 57, 58 inches of water in the basement.
Hmm. And you've never had it since then?
No, we haven't had a flood since then. Came close several times. Well, Crooked Creek started, almost spilled over the banks, but not enough to, at least not enough to hit us, and hopefully it's never going to happen to me.
You know, Ed Galvin called it the 100-year flood.
Yeah, that's what Jane Williams said, and some other people said, yeah.
Do you think that referred to just that it was as high a waters as it had ever reached in 100 years, or that it floods not that much, but
well,
every 100 years?
89, I don't think anybody was living in Central 100 years before that, let alone anybody being here to keep records,
mm-hmm.
You know, because this area didn't really get discovered until the 90s, 1890s, like 97. So, I don't know. I know they call it a 100-year flood, and I asked somebody, said, how can they call it a 100-year flood when nobody was living here?
Mm-hmm. But you also heard about a flood in 67?
I was in the flood in 67, living in Fairbanks, and at that time I had 57 inches of water in my living room. Not just in the basement. My basement was flooded, but I had that much water in the living room. And our central also was flooded because it was the year after we purchased the mine, which was 67 was the flood, and 68. In late 68, Jim came up to take a look at the property when we found out it was for sale. The mine was for sale. And there used to be a bridge across Deadwood. Going across Deadwood on over to Switch Creek to our road going up, which is a mile from Deadwood creek. And that bridge was washed out from the 1967 flood. And Jim had to drive the car through the creek to get up there to take a look and see the property. And at that time, the only reason we wanted it was mostly so we have a place to stay and a roof over our head and just to hang out. You know, pan a little bit of gold in the creek. We used to get lots of company coming out, people to see us. And it was just a nice recreational spot until we both ended our jobs in Fairbanks in 85 and came out here to live.
What do you think draws new residents to Central?
Oh, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Well, I talked to two different people and they said they like the quiet and they like it that we don't have to pay taxes, property taxes. They like to live in small towns.
And why do you think they leave?
I think the majority of them are retired and they're just tired of the big city.
I mean, why do you think they then leave Central?
Why they would leave Central? Mm-hmm. I think if when they leave Central, it's usually for health reasons. Being closer to doctors, it is 128 miles to drive.
Do you think when they when a new resident comes, they sort of change the community or, at all? Or?
No, I don't think they change the community. There's so many different opinionated people in this town. Nah, no.
How about tourism? Do you think that has an effect on the community?
Tourism has an effect on the community because it brings in some money. But with the hot springs being closed, tourism is finished.
Mm-hmm.
Until the hot springs ever gets opened up, the museum's going to be hurting because there's just no revenue. Mm-hmm. And it hurts the local community too. It's a place to go. It's a place to have some fun once in a while and to go see each other and. And in the wintertime especially, you have to have an outlet, otherwise you're going nuts in your own house, unless you know how to entertain yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But with computer age now, people entertaining themselves a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to have this outlet anymore that you needed before. In regards to communicating with other people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think men and women have the same kind of work in Central, or do they tend to do different kinds of jobs?
I think they tend to do different kinds of jobs.
Like?
Well, I don't know. The women do more like bookkeeping and tax preparing and crafty kind of a thing, or the men go out and chop the wood and run the heavy equipment if they have any or whatever else, you know.
So when you,
the land.
Right. When you were working with your husband on the mining, what kind of work did you do?
I helped out with the equipment sometimes. It's not necessarily that I ran the equipment, but when the equipment had to be moved from side to side, sometimes I had to sit on the sinks and pull and do things like that, but somebody always pretty much has to be there when there's big equipment involved and there's only one person there that works it, you know, in case of an accident. So, you know, you have to keep track of the guys.
Wasn't part of your job also cleaning the gold?
Yeah, after it was all said and done, after the mining season ended, I had to fine-tune the gold, yes.
So did we talk about historical events that you felt were important to Central? Anything else you felt was important to the
sort of historical flow of Central. We've talked about crabs, the hot springs.
Well,
I gave you a list that I tried to make of the various places
and
things, happenings that...
Oh, yeah, well, Crabs used to put on Memorial Day picnic, and then used to put on the 4th of July shindig, and then usually another one at Labor Day. And then anybody had any kind of a social event of their own, and it used to be able to go over and hold it in the park, you know, hold an event in the park, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I used to, you know, we spent our anniversary parties, but we usually spent them here at the house. And then I used to give Switch Creek parties at the end of the mining season up in Switch Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I had anywhere from 55 to 70 people show up, you know. Historically, I don't know that there was anything in regards to going back historically on it. I have no idea.
Okay. Well, let's move on to your experiences of climate change. Were you here in 1975?
Not in I lived in Fairbanks.
Okay. But you did come here.
Yeah, I was here. Yeah,
right.
Summertime. Yeah, I was a summer resident. Summer resident. Yeah.
What was the land and the weather like then?
Oh, I don't know.
Was it hot and dry? Was it cold and?
Well, we had really wet, cold summers, and then we had really hot and dry summers. Just sort of mixed. Sometimes it was only like for maybe 6 weeks, you know, no rain inside, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden here comes the downpours, you know, and sometimes it stayed wet until right the end of September.
Okay, how about downtown Central? Like right now, the sort of downtown Central corridor here has some nice green lawns and some, did it still have those in 75?
Oh, yeah.
Was it clearer or more trees?
No,
or?
No, wherever there was residents living in this town, they all had manicured lawns.
Okay. So now in 2000, do you think there's been, or 2010, do you think there's been a change from when you first started living here?
There's been a change because there's hardly anybody living here in Central, in town itself.
So in the land, you think?
There's some of the lots that are still kept up, but there's quite a few that are not.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're totally empty, and then some of them are in probate court, you know, where nobody can even do anything with it. Some people ask me, and they're interested in, they like to buy this, and they like to buy that, but can't do it because probate is holding the reins.
Mm-hmm. How about the weather?
The weather, the weather, I always never want to keep track of things like that at all.
You know, did keep track of the mushrooms and the berries.
Oh, yeah, well, okay. If we have a nice spring rain, we get lots of berries. We don't get no spring rain, we don't get no berries. And with the rain for the mushrooms, if it doesn't rain in June, we're not going to have any mushrooms.
Okay, so it doesn't matter from year to year.
And you know, last year was a heck of a berry year, you know. But we had the rain at the right time, you know. The berries were blooming, and we got rain, and it was just enough rain to make everything fruity.
Mm-hmm. How about this year?
This year, since my surgery, I haven't been out.
Okay.
I haven't been driving out. Usually I'm driving out up and down Deadwood to catch them and check things out, but I haven't been able to do so this year.
How about the effect of fires on the community?
Oh, that's devastating. That last big fire we had, man, it just about killed this town. And another big fire we had last year by Circle City, same thing. I mean, it's just the whole countryside between here and Circle City is totally devastated from the fires. Yes. And it looks horrible. It looks terrible. And I hope we don't have any more in this area.
She says, as we sit here and listen to the thunder roaring, rolling over us, we're hoping it's not dry thunder. And already in the beginning of this 2010, didn't we just decide we had 90 fires going?
90 fires going in the state, yeah.
When there was a fire or a flood, can you tell how the community reacted to it? You know, what happened when your Facebook flooded? You're just too popular.
Hello.
We're still here with Lori Wilde. We were discussing the effect of
fires
and floods. Did anybody come and help you during the flood?
Yeah, over in Hodge. Warren Hodge, the only one that came over and helped. As a matter of fact, like Pat Oaks and Krabs over here, they came and got pumps from us to pump their basements out. Mm-hmm. And since there's very few basements around this area, you know, so, you know, you got flooded, but only up to the front steps. You know, like I said, your yard got flooded and stuff, you know, and then the water subsided, and that was it. Except for those who had basements, they definitely got whopped. But that anybody lost property, cabin or whatever, anything, no. But it came close to getting into a couple of the cabins and a couple of the houses, yes. Matt Carter's over there, it went just to the upper step. It was like an inch from going into his house. And the cabin that we used to live in during the flood, that was sit right in front of this house, it came in this much from going into the front porch. And the inside of the living room was another inch and a half higher. So I didn't have anything to worry about there, but all that water that came, it actually came from up there. There's a slough right there. The water came from down from the S-curve, you know, when it washed across there, behind LaRue's, came that slough that's going down there, and it came from up there, and came to Severance's property at the time, washed right in front of my greenhouse, and straight into the basement. That's where the water came from.
Well, is the basement built on the old slough we were talking about earlier?
Well, there was a whole bunch of old sloughs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, not necessarily the old slough went crashing through this side.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one that came in up there, that old slough, that took like a curve. It went like straight across and then went over into the slough. That's the old slough still there.
How about during the fire? You know, if the...
I stayed home and watered my house thoroughly. I had spritzers going left, front, top, bottom, whatever.
And it came pretty close, because it came as far as Eddie O'Leary's.
Well, no, it came right behind us over there,
behind us too.
Where our other property is.
Oh, boy.
If Jim wouldn't have gone over there with the cat, it would have gotten, it had jumped across the creek, but Jim went over there with the cat and bulldozed them right back into the creek. And that's what saved our property over there from being burned.
The backside of this property? Or?
It's on this side of the creek.
Okay.
Our property,
mm-hmm.
You know, is on this side of the creek.
Mm-hmm.
And if Jim wouldn't have gone over there with the cat, it burned right there where you, when you're going on the intersection, going down to Stan Gallant's, and then us,
mm-hmm.
You know, going across the bridge, this whole corner burned.
Oh.
And it had jumped across the creek just a little bit below there, and it went right across there, and then Jim went over there with the cat and pulled us those three in, into the creek that saved it.
Well, temperature changes. If you notice changes in temperature or snowfall or...
Okay, we used to get a lot more snowfall. Last year we didn't get hardly nothing. Like last year, I think it's the lowest snowfall I've seen as long as I've been in Central.
Temperature?
Oh, I don't know. We had cold winter. Sometimes they say, oh, it's going to be a really mild winter. But we weren't here last year, but from the temperatures that I heard, it was a really cold winter. And the year before, too, they said, oh, no, it's not going to get cold. We ended up having almost 60 below. Like 58 below. For like 2 or 3 days. No, I wouldn't say no. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'd like to talk about the Yukon Charlie a little bit, since you spend some time up the Yukon Charlie. What is your overall opinion of the Yukon Charlie National Preserve?
My honest opinion about the Yukon Charlie Preserve, we don't need a Park Service to run it. They tell us what to do. It's just a preserve. It is not a national park. And another thing, there is so few people floating down that river, even though they say an eagle, they have thousands of people going through. The ones that go through Eagle, they're just going on a tour boat. Those are not people who are using Yukon Charlie Park.
Mm-hmm. But you do use Yukon Charlie.
We do use Yukon Charlie Park. But we get told we can't even leave a 5-gallon can of gas stashed for hunting season, or leave it on the river while we're going up to the head of the Charlie. By the time we come back down, it's either confiscated by the Park Service or there's a nasty note on there. And I don't think we should think that's not right. That is just not right. Not everybody has the money to get a super duper raft and have airplanes fly you in to the head of Charlie so you can float down and see the nice scenic river. And another thing, when they had the fire up there, they let it burn. And that burn is still visible today, and that was close to 25 years ago. And it was a shame. It was a total shame that the Park Service did not fight that fire.
This is the one up the...
That's the one up the Charlie.
Up the Charlie. What would you say is the most negative thing that you feel about the Park Service? Now I'll ask you about positives, so see if you've got something to balance it here.
Negatively?
Mm-hmm.
When they bother us, when they start stopping us in the middle of the river and wanting to see our driver's license, our hunting license, even though we didn't have a gun out, while we were still running on the river.
So you got stopped in the boat?
Well, they tried to, except we had boat trouble, and we went on shore.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys recognized us, who we were, after we got on shore. And they did not do it to us. But they were, that's what their intentions were, because they chased us.
Hmm.
They came down, you know, and they started waving, and Jim just said, don't even look, just ignore it. And I did. We ignored it. We went up on shore. Had a little engine trouble there. And there's three guys coming on the boat, and the one guy knew who we were. And he did not ask us for any paperwork. And it was just my husband and me in the boat.
Do you have, what has been the most positive thing you can think about the preserve? They fixed up Slavens?
Yeah, they fixed up Slavens. And I think they should build more cabins. They should build a few more cabins, especially the ones that had been burnt down, that they have been burnt down. I said, you know, even though the tourists and you know, they say it's for the people preserved, if you start out in White Horse with your canoe, you know, or kayak and or whatever boat you have, you know, to float down the river, he said there is times where you need to stay in a cabin. And the only time they're going to get to see a cabin is slavens that's available to them. And that's not enough.
Did the one at the mouth of the canyon burn?
No, it got flooded out last year. It's off the foundation. It's useless. There's no more cabin. And or there should, even if they don't have the money to do that, there should be nice enough to lease somebody 5 acres for whatever, even if it's $500 a year, you know, to build a cabin on, but fine. We don't need to, the people don't need to have the right to the cabin as long as they can use it whenever they want to. You know, and when they're done, like Jim and I, we're in our 70s now, you know, if we're going to be using a cabin, you know, first of all, we need to use the cabin because we're getting old and stiff. You know, we'd like to have a warm cabin, especially when we go hunting, being out on the water all day long. You know, we've been using Slavin's cabin, which is nice, but there's, you know, it's a big cabin to eat also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but we've been, had been watching, you know, ask around and say, hey, let us build a cabin. We turn it over to you when we're not using it anymore. And it's not those people's land. That land belongs to the people, and we are the people, and I think we should have more to say about it. That's my opinion.
That's your opinion. Can you describe any of the trails that are in the area, and maybe what, how they've been used?
There's a lot of old trails around up there. I haven't heard of anybody, let's say in the last 15 years, that anybody even used those trails. And another thing, they weren't kept up.
How about the trails around here?
Don't know very much. Because we have too many roads.
Like the Bielenberg?
Oh yeah, to build a Bielenberg trail, but that's only used in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, to finish off here, I just thought you might tell me a little bit about what you think might happen in Central in the future.
Hopefully the Springs is going to open up and somebody decent comes in and makes something of the place, and it would put more life in the community, plus it would open up jobs, job opportunities, even if it's only for the summer, seasonal. Some people are still willing to work 3 or 4 months out of the year. And keep the economy going if it's possible.
Mm-hmm. And the Crab's Corner, too?
Well, yeah, well.
We're finishing up here. Trying to get her to think. You can tell me, too, what you think is going to happen to Central in the future.
Before or after BM died?
Oh, now! What's going to happen now?
Oh, not much. Till Bobby dies.
Mm-hmm.
And he might outlive a bunch of us.
Sort of hinges on the Springs. All right, well, thank you, Lori and Jim.
You're welcome.